The Israel assault on the Iranian assault on Israel, which now seems inevitable. Well, the U.S. is warned of Iran's retaliation to the Israeli attack in Damascus. Now, remember, there was an attack that took place in Damascus where an Iranian embassy was attacked allegedly by Israel. Now, what the U.S. says is that Iran could target Israeli embassies in retaliation. In fact, Iran is reportedly preparing to avenge the killing of its military officers. In fact, a top general was also killed in that attack. Now, reports suggest that the Iranian attack could be a combination of missiles and drones. This is the U.S. now has rushed additional military troops to protect Israel and, you know, American nationals there as well. But the fact of the matter is that now an Iranian assault on Israel seems to be in the offing. In fact, that could happen sooner rather than later, as President Biden has also said. But let's take a look at the timeline of the conflict, because this is a conflict that has been in the making. Now, the hostilities grew amid Israel's growing ties with non-Arab states, including the West, in the 1970s. In fact, Iran named Israel the Little Satan and US the Big Satan in its policy against world powers. What's also important here is that the conflict turned violent post Iran's funding to various militia in Iraq as well as Syria. And Iran has also accused Israel of sabotaging its nuclear program. In fact, Iran's support to Hamas, Hezbollah and the Houthis has irked Israel as well. In fact, Iran-backed Houthis and Hamas have attacked Israel since October the 7th as well, when the Gaza war first broke out, that Hamas attack that we all remember, that fateful day. In fact, Israel, in retaliation, has carried out airstrikes in Syria as well to halt the flow of weapons as well. But it's not just the US, but it's India as well, which is on alert. The Indian government has asked citizens not to travel to Iran or Israel. In fact, the government says it has stepped up its outreach to Indians in Iran and Israel as well. Europe-bound Air India flights, meanwhile, are circumventing the Middle East route. Vistara has told NDTV as well that it's reworking its flight paths to Europe amid tension. So certainly, the Middle Eastern airspace is not safe anymore amid fears of another war. But the latest that we're getting is that a cargo ship has been seized by Iran. And what's absolutely unfortunate and concerning is that 17 Indian nationals were on board the seized ship, as per sources. Now, Iran seized this ship just a couple of hours back, and sources say that India is in touch with Iranian authorities because 17 Indians were on board this cargo ship. Sources also say that efforts are on for the early release of the Indian nationals. But the larger question that we ask on Left, Right and Center tonight: are we ready for another war as another front now opens in the Gaza war? Is a wider regional war now inevitable? Joining me on Left, Right and Center tonight, I'm being joined by Dinkar Prakash Srivastava, who's a former ambassador to Iran. Also with me, Dr. Kinviraj Jangid, who is currently an associate professor at the O.P. Jindal Global University and also a visiting faculty at an Israel university. Kamer Aga, a Middle East expert, is also with us. Going across to you first, Ambassador Prakash, how do you see the developments in West Asia? U.S. says that now an Iranian assault on Israel is inevitable. Are we ready for another front in the Gaza war? I mean, lakhs have been killed in Gaza. The world economy has been crippled. You have global powers who are now going through an economic slowdown as well. What could this mean, a potential Iranian attack on Israel?
If you look at the immediate background, the present chain of events starts with first April attack by Israel on Iranian consulate in Damascus. This was a violation of Syrian sovereignty, and this was a breach of Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Immunities. Iranian authorities have exercised restraint so far, and this was, Gaza war is about 6 months old. And right at the beginning, U.S. Secretary of State, U.S. Defense Secretary, and President Biden himself had said that Iran did not have any immediate knowledge or hand in the events of 7th October. What has held peace so far and stopped escalation of a local conflict into a regional conflagration was a restraint exercised by three major powers, United States, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. Now, let me illustrate this point. What has kept the oil prices stable so far, though they have started rising, is an understanding between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Now, if with the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate, the situation has changed because for the first time, this carries the risk of a direct clash between the major powers involved. I would not like to jump to the conclusion, and let's hope that all sides exercise restraint.
You know, what we have seen on the ground, I mean, blacks have been killed in Gaza, and we need perhaps stronger intervention from global powers as well. Kamal Aga, come in on this point. Is this a failure of diplomacy and a complete breakdown of any sort of understanding between the Middle East and the Western nations and between the Middle East and, say, the global powers, including the U.S. and various other countries? Because in the U.N. as well, we have seen the U.S. Sort of veto resolutions multiple times. Do you see this as a failure of diplomacy, the fact that now Middle East is on the brink?
Yes, you know, it is not only the failure of diplomacy, but, many countries have accused United States as a complicit in this war. Because it's the U.S., which is vetoing the U.N. ceasefire resolutions. And secondly, it's the U.S. which is supplying weapons along with Germany and some other Western nations. And that iron, they call it ironclad security for the State of Israel, And they have not taken any serious effort to call for a ceasefire or to bring some sort of semblance of peace in Gaza. That is continuing, and now new chapter has also emerged. As ambassador has mentioned, on April 1st when Iranian consulate was attacked. It's for a very long time Israelis are saying that Iranians have been linked nuclear weapon, and they said that it has to be neutralized. The only way is to deal with Iran is to bomb this nuclear installation. They said that because they believe that poses threat to Israel. So that is the line which is going on for quite some time. It's not a new thing. And now it thinks, Israel is pushing a greater war for two reasons. One is Iran. They believe that Iran is supporting arc of resistance, which Iran calls, the Houthi rebels or Shia militia in Iraq or Hezbollah and some other groups based in Syria.
Right.
So they want, both these arc of resistance as well as Iran should be contained. And that's the only way to contain is war, because Americans have failed in by imposing the sanctions or containment of Iran. Now the only thing is regime change. And Israel has the support of these big powers, but we don't know, how long this will continue or how long it will go.
Yes,
up.
And Dr. Jangit, come in on this point as well, because, while we may look at the immediate trigger, which was the Damascus attack, but this has been a conflict in the making. Israel and Iran have been sort of skeptical of each other. There has been this growing cynicism, as Mr. Aga also pointed out, that Iran's support to the Houthis, to Hezbollah, to the Hamas, that has been something that has not that has irked Israel for a long time. So how do we sort of bring them on a negotiating table? Is that even a possibility anymore?
Vedant, it's not a possibility, because Iran, in a very reckless manner, uses this opportunity for the last 6 months to do something that we call in IR brinkmanship, pushing things to the edge, giving a complete sense of ownership in a way that it forces the other to react. When we talk about the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, I think important point for the last 6 months that the Israelis have gone through is that because of the Hezbollah and Hezbollah's constant rockets and the shelling, close to a lakh of the Israelis are evacuated from the north of Israel. So imagine for the 6 months, these people are scattered in their family, friends, other places than their own homes. So I think Israel has been facing this terrible situation at the north border. And the attack in Damascus was a signal that Israel wants a retreat from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Iranian, you know, attack on Israel goes back to what you just said, little Satan. It's completely in the direction of anti-Americanism. I want to share with you that on 3rd of this month, on April, Palestinian Authority in West Bank made and released a statement that they do not want Iran to spread the chaos in West Bank. They do not want Iran to meddle in the Palestinian affairs. Why would Palestinian Authority and the West Bank say such a thing against Iran? Because Palestinian Authority realizes that Hamas has been funded and financed by Iran with an ideological input, which is the Shia school of thought. And that harms the Palestinian unity and the authority.
So perhaps there are many fault lines really that running through this conflict.
Of the Iranian interventions here.
Absolutely. And there are many fault lines running through the conflict, as you said. Ambassador Srivastav, looking at India's diplomatic strategy through this, you know, the Prime Minister has said that this is not an era of war. You have your External Affairs Minister Jay Shankar also talking about how Palestinians have been denied their homeland. How do you see India's diplomatic strategy going forward now that another front could possibly open in the Gaza war?
I think India has maintained its historical support to Palestinian cause. India has also cautioned restraint to both sides. But this is an issue where I think the regional powers have the primary responsibility for ensuring that the matter is resolved. And the regional powers are Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And I think all three of them are making efforts to contain this conflict. So far as Indian strategy is concerned, we'll have to wait and see how the situation evolves. I would not like to jump to any conclusion and try and presume Indian response, which will be known only if there is a further escalation. But I think going by the stand taken by us so far, India has been cautioning all sides to exercise restraint, and it will continue to do so.
Yes, absolutely. And currently the focus, of course, is to make sure that Indian nationals there are safe, which is what, the Ministry of External Affairs has also said. But, Mr. Aga, come in on the point of regional powers and their role going forward, whether it is Egypt or Jordan. How do you see the role of regional powers in containing the conflict? Because now you have many fronts open. It could very well sort of escalate into a wider conflict there in West Asia. What is the role of regional powers now going forward?
They have, some influence over Hamas, especially the Qatar, which is playing. Egypt also, comes in. The problem is, they want some sort of a compromise formula, release of Palestinians, particularly
yes.
who are in prison. But Israel is not willing, because the number they are saying is too big. Israel's policy is, they wanted all the hostages to be released immediately, which Hamas is not agreeing. That is a problem. But as far as India's position is concerned, I just like to add one thing. India it's in our interest, the war doesn't spread into the region, because over 75 lakhs Indians are working in the Persian Gulf region.
Yes.
And they are sending almost $30 to $40 billion as a remittances. Then we have a trade over more than $125 or $50 billion in this region. Plus investments are also coming from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and many other countries. Right. 70% of our LNG gas comes from Qatar. If supply chain is disrupted in Gulf of Hormuz, then the oil prices will also go up. It's already gone up.
Absolutely. And that is what we saw, you know, during the Houthi attacks in the Red Sea as well, that ultimately it's a whole supply chain that gets disrupted because of these unprecedented attacks. Let me go across to Dr. Jangid now on the point you earlier made about anti-Americanism. You know, this sort of the differences between the Middle East and the West, which now seem irreconcilable, what led to this? What led the world to this point where there's almost a sort of complete hostility towards global powers, whether it is the US or other sort of pro-Israel forces, this sort of hostility that you see in the Middle East? What led to this?
I think, Vedad, it's important to see Iranian anti-Americanism. I think Iran went through a domestic change in 1979, and yes, America really wanted a regime change. So the American policy against the Iranian revolution of 1979 became the very valid source for the Iranian regime to detest America. As far as the Arab countries, and I think I'm very happy about the three regional powers earlier mentioned, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and UAE and Qatar, they are extremely pro-American. Barring the public opinion in the Arab societies, where there is a criticism of America, Arab regimes and Arab rulers have been very, very close to American politics in the Middle East. And this is the reason Iran doesn't want a containment of the conflict. Because if Arab, Sunni, Gulf monarchies and states are trying to contain the situation and move on, Iran doesn't see much of the scope to do anti-Americanism. Chaos is the engine and the fuel of the Iranian regime right now. And that chaos is completely exploiting the bogey of the Palestinian cause. So I think we will face this kind of a irresponsible politics for a while. So far, America has been very successful in two strategies: making Israel really not exceed beyond what it has done in the last 6 months. I think I disagree with Aga Saab, where America does have, America has shown two remarkable changes: forwarding Israel from Rafah military invasion and allowing a UN resolution against Israel. So I think these are two very remarkable American positive steps, we can say, at the end of the 6 months of their unconditional support to Israel. And the Arab states are still working with America.
Right. So I believe Dr. Jangid, just taking a cue from what you said, do you think that with another front now possibly opening in the Gaza war, is there going to be any relief for the constant bombardments, the constant strikes that we see in Gaza? Because, you know, things have barely sort of come back to normalcy, and now this would only exacerbate the situation in Gaza as well.
It will. The problem in Gaza is that Israeli political leadership is not making a policy decision, which is to make a political solution or commit to the two-state solution. They just want to deal with this situation through military.
Okay.
Israeli military is not with them. Israeli military wants the political class to take a decision because they cannot really handle more than 2 million people in the population.
Yes.
And it's also a problem on the part of the Israeli leadership, for which America is really fighting Israel in their bilateral relationship.
Absolutely. And before I close the debate, quick last word to all three of you on, you know, what's the way forward? Because you have two wars raging. The world seems to have lost interest in the Ukraine-Russia war, but it's still killing people. It's still very much sort of going on. How do we come to some sort of a consensus, some sort of a global consensus? It's the biggest election year this year. You have, billions of people who will be casting their ballot across the world. India, of course, is going to polls as well. How do you see the world emerging out of war, starting with you, Ambassador Srivastava, and then I'll go across to each one of you?
You know, it's a complex situation. There are three strands. There has to be a recognition of Israel's need for security, which has to be provided for, so that there's no repeat of October 7th. this has to be coupled with a realization of Palestinian aspiration for statehood.
Okay.
Which has been accepted even by Israel as part of Oslo process, implementation delayed indefinitely. This has become an untenable proposition and has to be brought to a speedy conclusion.
Okay.
And the third element is to integrate Iran in the international mainstream.
Okay. And Dr. Jahangir, your last word.
Well, I wish that Joe Biden comes back in the American politics. I personally think a lot depends on the American presidency and the Middle East. It's only Joe Biden who can really compel Israeli politicians to control and act with restraint. And it's also Joe Biden, kind of a leader who can really take along the other moderate Arab states. So I personally would really pray that happens. And
that's an interesting point, because many would disagree with you and many would say that, you know, perhaps it's Biden, as Mr. Aga also said earlier, that he is complicit perhaps, in the Israel-Gaza war. But Mr. Aga, your thoughts?
No, I don't have much to add, you know, but it's up to the Western powers, particularly the Americans, you know, if they put pressure on America, and as Ambassador has just mentioned, you know, solve the problem once forever, you know, as long as Palestinian problems remains, you know, these type of problems will keep occurring.
Absolutely.
We have been seeing it not for, for the last several decades, you know.
Yes.
And it's a high time that America believes in, and European Union also believes in, two-state solution. So this is the time, I think.
Yes.
They should come up and
as
solve
you,
this
as
problem.
You said, it's an entrenched problem and a complex problem, and it has no simple answers. But thanks very much, gentlemen, for joining us on the debate tonight.